This is Gavin Edwards, the author of The Tao of Bill Murray, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for January 30th, 2018. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I am a little groundhog.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, Chip, yes, you're right. It's Groundhog Day on Friday. Happy Excellent. Groundhog Day, everyone.
Well, this is the time of the year that we have a sweet vermouth on the rocks with a twist. And we say a little prayer to world peace, my friend.
I love that movie. I can watch that movie over and over again. My wife hates that movie.
You could watch it over and over and over again?
Yeah, which really is the funniest thing I could say about that movie. Because, yes, she feels like she watches it over and over and over again because she's just watched it once. We went out to Woodstock, Illinois, the filming location for that, and we've got in our show notes, you can go back in time, 3 years ago, Chip. 3 years ago we went out there and did that show. We need to get back out there.
And they can relive that show
over and over again.
All right.
That's great. You can hear all those people eating because we were in a French restaurant.
Exactly.
It's great stuff.
All the good stuff.
Then you got the Super Bowl. That's on Sunday.
Super Bowl. And so you have your choice.
That's the football one.
That's right. New York. New England Patriots.
No, not New York. New York was eliminated.
See, New England Patriots.
Uh-huh.
And then we have the Philadelphia Eagles.
Philadelphia Eagles.
Exactly. So you can pick your winner. That's on Sunday. And Monday, some people...
will go to work afterwards.
Will go to work.
Yeah.
Some people will go later.
Yeah. Monday is off. Monday's been canceled. Please see Tuesday.
I still don't understand why it can't be Super Bowl Saturday.
Why not? What is the downside of doing this thing as a whole weekend and doing the game in the middle of the whole weekend instead of as the prize at the end?
I don't know, Steve.
I don't know. I guess we're not smart enough. We need to find somebody smarter. We need to bring in somebody who knows more about these things than we do. We have Kyle Hickman here with us today. Well, good morning, Kyle.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Kyle is a movie expert. He knows about movies more than Chip does and more than I do. Kyle sees movies.
Kyle sees lots of movies.
Kyle sees movies. That's your... There you go. You need to get a URL. KyleSeesMovies.com. Kyle watched 150 films in 2016. He's an avid movie fan who loves to attend the local theater. He writes a number of topics on his blog, KyleAHickman.blogspot.com, and his Snapchat reviews are a fun, quick, easy view on today's movies. You can find the link to all of his work in our show notes. Welcome in, Kyle.
I appreciate it, guys, and I think you just created my new LinkedIn headline. Avid moviegoer. I don't... Whatever.
Something
like that. I gotta embrace it, right?
Movie file.
Movie file.
I'm glad to be here. It's gonna be fun.
Need a theme song. That's your next step.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our Film at 11, our movie of the week. Chip, you have been doing the tour of all the Oscar-winning movies, or at least Oscar-nominated movies, because not every one of these can win. You saw The Post this week.
Sure, and I want to mention that we will talk about this shortly, and that's one of the reasons we brought Kyle on. But anyway, I use MoviePass,
yes,
the service that we've been talking about, to go to these movies. Interesting, my mother was visiting from North Carolina, mm-hmm. and I went to see The Post, Steven Spielberg's movie. It has stars Forrest Gump.
That's Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks, the guy from Bosom Buddies.
Oh, and also that lady from Mamma Mia 1, the first musical. So she's in this too, right?
Yeah, she's an up-and-coming star. I think she might go somewhere.
Yeah, Meryl Streep,
right? Meryl Streep might be someone to watch.
This is about the rise of the Washington Post, which was a Southern newspaper that certainly was not known for its hard-hitting news or anything like that. Pretty much, yeah, just a newspaper. Growing in from to being competitors, let's just say, to the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what ended up happening is there was a scandal going on. Some papers were uncovered by the New York Times.
The Pentagon Papers.
That's right. They were going
dun, dun, dun.
To paint a a bad light on what was going on in Vietnam about mm-hmm. the information that was known. And the Supreme Court came in and they shut down the release of those, the New York Times release of those, that information.
Right.
Well, the Washington Post got a hold of that information.
And they were not told by the Supreme Court that they couldn't put it out there, so they did.
And anyway, then we have a movie wrapped around that and how this paper became the paper that we know today.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the paper we know today is owned by Jeff Bezos.
Right. Amazon.
Founder of Amazon.
Right. The richest man on earth, by the way.
Yes. All right, so I totally got this wrong when we were doing the preview for it last week.
Mm-hmm.
This movie ends with Watergate.
That's right.
So what we end up having is this one scandal that they covered, and then the second one was Watergate right afterwards. And I had, when I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
Really, really young, I went to see All the President's Men with my mother.
Yes.
About the Watergate scandal.
So and you and your mother are really good at watching these movies.
I don't know. I'm not around her that much, but we seem to have found the one that was the thread that worked together.
This is kind of like the prequel. This is like the Rogue One to All the President's Men, where this movie ends like the moment before All the President's Men's story begins.
Sure. And Kyle, you saw this film also. Do you want to chime in with what you felt about this movie?
I think I have to recognize my bias on the front end of when I heard about The Post, I automatically compared it to Spotlight. And I think that's absolutely unfair for The Post, right? And so putting it into that light and comparing the two, I think that's unfair to The Post. Heavy hitters with Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep. I mean, really, really good performances. I kept waiting for kind of that like inspirational at the end moment that's really going to drive me into going, that was a crazy, awesome film. And I didn't get that, but mm-hmm. I did think that getting an inside look, especially before Watergate happened, and seeing that transition, I thought that was really fascinating.
What I think that was missed in Spotlight and The Post, and I can draw this, was I left the movie thinking that this should be an advertisement that the viewer who saw this should be subscribing to a newspaper. How fragile their finances are and how important they can be to releasing information to the public.
And how fragile their finances were even at this time. I mean, that's a discussion that has been had for a long time.
Actually, when they had lots and lots of readers as opposed to what they have right now.
Right.
Yeah. All right, but I also got to see a second movie, Steve.
Your second Oscar nominee is The Darkest Hour. This is the Churchill story with Gary Oldman smoking and drinking.
That stars that guy from Harry Potter's film, right?
Gary Oldman has been in a lot more than just the Harry Potter. Can you at least give him The Fifth Element as the thing that he's from?
Anyway, this is Gary Oldman, who totally changed his body to look like Churchill.
Yeah.
And Steve, I, from my understanding, he really had to really get into this part,
yeah,
to the point where he had to go to the hospital.
He was hospitalized in the filming of this for nicotine poisoning. He smoked so many cigars in this film that he had to be hospitalized.
First of all, any person trying to keep up with Winston Churchill's diet, which we got a nice introduction to in this film, Winston Churchill would get up in the morning. He would have like a scotch and soda. He had a bottle of champagne for lunch. He had a bottle of champagne for dinner and pretty much drank scotch and soda throughout the whole day.
It's like Slim Fast, only different.
Well, it's kind of like a different type of Slim Fast. His lifestyle was sort of a dare on what your body could probably handle.
And he did it.
And so the story, if you're not familiar with Churchill, one, he was a guy that was sent away. He was not part of the government at the time, but basically was called in during World War II as a historian to run the war.
Hmm.
And then as soon as the war's over, he's voted out of office. So they used him. And this is about his rise of power, about his telling the English people, the English-speaking people, that they were going to fight Hitler, this evil. This was a wonderful bookend because you found out what was going on in Britain compared to last summer we got to see Dunkirk.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to see the forces that were the evacuation and the civilian ships that came over and picked them up.
A different perspective on the same thing.
Absolutely. We got to see some of that.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed this film.
Kyle, did you see this one?
I did, and I have to agree wholeheartedly. I think it's one of the best movies of the year. In a year where we saw some really phenomenal performances by lead actors, so Daniel Day-Lewis in Phantom Thread, although my boy James Franco got snubbed in the
Disaster Artist
is like it's like my soul. And Timothée Chalamet in Call Me by Your Name also put in a really good performance. I would be surprised if Gary Oldman didn't win Best Actor in the Oscars.
Wow.
Just to have that transformation and do what he did. And it's one of those movies where you get to the end and you're like, oh, that was Gary Oldman? Really?
Nice.
Because he does such a good Churchill impression. I would be surprised. Mark it down today. If he doesn't win, I owe you something. I don't
know. An extra blog. You can exactly. put an extra blog entry saying, I'm sorry.
Reasons why Gary Oldman didn't win.
Well, I think if he doesn't win, he can live the Winston Churchill week of drinking and food.
Oh, boy.
And then, you know, have to take a week off afterward trying to recover from that.
If anything else, if you put yourself in the hospital because of a role, because you went that hard in the paint, he deserves, give him the award. Just give it to him.
Yeah.
He wins.
I completely agree with you on that one.
All right, so I didn't get to see everything, but let's get to some things that Kyle saw.
Yeah, Kyle got to see Phantom Thread. This is, as we mentioned last week, this is Daniel Day-Lewis's last film. He has said, I'm never going to do this ever again. And everyone went, okay, we've heard other people say never again. We'll see what happens, Daniel. So tell us all about Phantom Thread.
So we hadn't seen Daniel Day-Lewis since 2012, since the last time he won Best Actor for Lincoln.
Right.
And so it had been 5 years since we had seen him on film. And I think if you know Daniel Day-Lewis and his career and his background, you know that he is kind of a crazy person on set, right? And the classic method acting to where everybody hates you.
Right.
One of my favorite films is Tropic Thunder. And Tropic Thunder, Robert Downey Jr.'s character makes fun of people like Daniel Day-Lewis, who are the method actors.
What do you mean, you people? What do you mean, you people?
My favorite quote from that movie that just kind of encapsulates everything that is Daniel Day-Lewis is, he says, hey, when are you going to drop the gig? And he says, I don't drop the character until I do the DVD commentary. And that for me kind of just tells the story of Daniel Day-Lewis. And so I saw this actually last night, so it's fresh in my mind, fresh in terms of reflecting on it. But it's just classic Daniel Day-Lewis, living into this character, this 1950s renowned dressmaker. Normally, I wouldn't connect to this type of movie content. Mm-hmm. Movies about fashion really aren't things that usually attracts me to the movie theater. But I found myself locked in from start to finish because of the performances. On the back end of the film, I did some research and I learned that, like any good method actor, Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, he walks the walk. He and Leslie Manville they created a friendship out of thin air 6 months before the movie to make sure that they had some kind of camaraderie before they got on set. Because if you see the film, her performance, she's nominated as well, and for very good reason, because she is the most cold-hearted but stern and confident person I've ever seen in a movie. Even if you're not a fashion person, the film is just, it will keep you glued to the TV. And I don't want to give too many spoilers, but let's just say there is this scene towards the end that is this classic Western showdown between Alma, the woman in his life, and Daniel Day-Lewis's character, Reynolds Woodcock. And it is probably one of the more powerful scenes I've seen in recent memory.
Wow.
So it's a very unique film, and I'm glad that people are going out and seeing it, because it's definitely not one that's in every theater across the country right now. So
well,
highly recommended.
Well, Daniel Day-Lewis is the type of actor that if he is in something, you have to trust that he picked quality parts, because he has.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems like it would be right up there in something that we all should see.
We're definitely in the end of January here, where all those Oscar films, they've now been nominated and they're getting a new strength. So you should go see all of those.
So now that we've mentioned all the great films that are out there, Steve. Steve, what did you get to see this week?
Okay, so we have to go back to 2016.
Go back in time a long, long time ago.
A long, long time ago. In 2016, we reviewed a movie called Man from Earth. This is Jerome Bixby. He is one of the amazing writers, both of Star Trek and of The Twilight Zone. Fantastic short story writer, and he unfortunately passed away. And his son made this film, Man from Earth, back in 2016. 2007.
Yes.
And we got wind of it in 2016, and a lot of other people did too. It's got an 85% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. This is a really good...
It was an interesting story. It's a story about a person who'd lived for a long, long time.
He says he's lived for the last 14,000 years. And cannot be killed. And it's a one-stage kind of play that has been filmed.
Exactly.
And we get this story through the text, and we understand these characters, and these characters are so well-developed, even though they're all in this one set.
So as we went through this low-budget, wonderful science fiction-y story, mm-hmm. That came out like a play. Steve, they had to bring out a part two.
Well, Jerome Bixby unfortunately passed away, and his son decided that, wow, we really did something great with this film in 2007, and we need to make a sequel to this film. Because, you know, when something is really unique and really a once-in-a-lifetime adventure, do it again.
All right,
that makes sense.
All right, so we have... All right, there's two parts to this. One is... They brought out the second part of this movie.
Right. This is 10 years later. It's called Man from Earth Holocene.
All right. So the second part is how they chose to release it.
Yes. Because this became a cult classic the first time, they decided to make it a cult classic this time. And they have a way for you to pay to watch it on Vimeo. They have a way for you to see this film through the Pirate Bay and other torrenting sites, so you can download this for free as a pirate, because they, the production company, have posted this onto the Pirate Bay for you. So you can watch it, and at the beginning there's a little speech by the director saying, we've posted this onto the Pirate Bay for you, thank you for downloading it. If you like it, please support all of these people who have made this film and pay afterwards.
Yeah, kind of a Patreon.
Very similar to what we do with Patreon, yes. Mm-hmm. And so I did pay for it. I watched it through Vimeo because I don't want to pirate movies. And I sort of regretted it. This is not a great movie, unfortunately.
Steve, that's disappointing to hear. That you paid for it. No, it's disappointing to hear that you it wasn't very good.
I support independent filmmakers. Sure. I enjoy watching bad movies all the time. So I enjoyed the production of this and watching it. It features Michael Dorn, who you might remember as Worf on Star Trek The Next Generation, because, of course, there's a Star Trek connection with Jerome Bixby. It features Vanessa Williams. Vanessa Williams is in this movie, acting with William Catt. I can't go wrong with this, except for it's really just fan fiction of this son of this great writer who thought he could get lightning in a bottle a second time.
All right, so on the grand scheme, let's think about this, how they're going to make their money back. Does it have a wide enough appeal that Riff Trax or Mystery Science Theater would pick it up?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. As much as the wide appeal from the first movie in 2007, we liked that movie very much.
In fact, I could see stage plays being performed concerning it, because it really was that type of thing.
Well written.
Yeah. Kyle, tell us about your experience with The Man from Earth.
I think number one, if there's anybody to blame here, it's David Lee Smith. Why, based on your assessment, Steve, the fact that he agreed to participate in this project as John Oldman again.
Yeah, he's the main actor.
If he would have said no, we wouldn't have this conversation.
You might be absolutely correct on this. If son of wonderful writer walks up to you and says, I have a crazy idea, just saying no might be the right choice, and that might have kept this from us.
So I'm going to blame David Lee Smith.
Okay.
That's where I start. But the original film, I'm very much on board with the two of you. Phenomenal story. What I think is really interesting and unique about it is, if you watch it, right, he's in a room with all of these other professors, and they are all of a discipline or industry that would allow them to challenge him based on the claims he's making. Because he says he's 14,000 years old, and he's got an archaeologist in the room, he's got a biologist in the room, he's got professors of all these different disciplines who are experts in these things, right? And I know that's crafted intentionally, but I think that's what makes the movie so interesting, because you've got professionals who are trained decades challenging this guy and saying, what you're saying is completely crazy, and he's able to defy every one of their criticisms.
Correct.
And so I think I saw that movie for the first time back in about 2010. And since then, it's been one of my favorite movies because it's one of those. I've always appreciated the ones that are great that no one really knows about. Mm-hmm. And that was one of those ones that always stuck out to me. So I agree, Chip. It could be a play because it happens all in the same building and just outside of that building.
All right. So now that we have all these movies that we've talked about, just remember you can go to them. Mm-hmm. Because we're getting ready to release all the movies that are coming out this week. And
yeah, it's the end of January, and the great films are certainly out there in the theaters for you. And there's some ones opening this week as well. The first one is called Winchester. This is the imagination of the story of the Winchester family. You know, the ones who created the rifle.
And the
fact is that there's a house that is always being built, and there's maybe a ghost story to tell. So they told a ghost story.
All right. So there is. This is based on, you know, part of a true story, mm-hmm. sort of Amityville Horror-ish, I would say. And yeah, you know, we got a Helen Mirren in this film, but the real story, and that is that she was the inheritor of the Winchester rifle money, and her belief was that she could never complete her home. So she, throughout her life, if you go visit her home, she's got crazy turns, and they built that home throughout her entire life. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason is she believed that if she ever stopped building her home, that the ghost would come to her.
The ghosts of all the people killed by the Winchester rifle.
All right, so that seems like that would be, knowing that information, would make for a great haunted story.
Right.
And guess what? Here we go. We've got, this is it.
It's got Dame Helen Mirren. It's probably a good ghost story. Do you have any interest in this one, Kyle?
Yeah, I think I'd check it out.
Okay.
I like Helen Mirren. She does good work. So
yeah. Sure.
It seems like a unique storyline, and I'm always interested in those.
The other one opening this week is called The Cage Fighter. This is kind of a documentary made into a narrative. The whole time I'm watching the trailer, I was not sure if this was a true documentary, a real story about real people, or a narrative. And it goes between those two lines. This is the story of a MMA fighter, one of those guys that just beats the heck out of other people.
Yeah, and the training they go through and the pressures they have from their family.
And the medical problems that they have.
Absolutely. So it talks a little bit about... you know, the head injuries. It talks a little bit about the discipline it takes to be a fighter, mm-hmm. and then the pain basically the family goes through as they're, you know, preparing for this, and the results of after the fight. I mean, right. Obviously, Dad's got to heal himself, and so this looks interesting. Mm-hmm. Although it's a subject I don't have a lot of interest in the sense I'm not an MMA kind of guy.
Kyle, are you a MMA kind of guy? Are you cage fighting on the weekends?
Not necessarily. No, I haven't thrown the fists around very often recently.
But recently?
I saw the film a few years ago, Warrior. It's about with Joel Edgerton and Tom Hardy. Mm-hmm. And it's about two brothers from the MMA world. And that received a lot of critical acclaim. And so just because of that, I might go see this one. Because that said, but also that might set a really high unrealistic bar. And it may... maybe let down in the process. So who knows?
Who knows? Maybe it's a wonderful film. I don't know.
That's the beauty of movie going, right?
That's right.
You really don't know walking in the door.
Right.
Steve, are there any like sci-fi end of the world type of stories that we could watch this week?
Yeah, this week there's one called Scorched Earth. This is another one of those, the earth is in danger and we have destroyed the earth and now we have to live like old-fashioned cowboys and we're going to kill each other stories.
Bounty hunters, Steve. Yeah. Bounty hunters.
This is a sci-fi channel level movie. Look at this trailer. I was like, yeah, if it's on the sci-fi channel, maybe I'll watch this one.
I'm with you, and that's a good reason why there's a lot of great films that you can see mm-hmm. that probably came out before this week. So if you haven't seen some of those, consider those, and if you've seen all those, then you've got three new ones to address.
There you go.
And on the MMA topic, Gina Carano, who is the lead in Scorched Earth, is a former MMA fighter.
Well, there you go. You got it.
Ding, 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 ding.
There's some reason to see this movie if you are into punching people on the weekends.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. We have this new thing. It's called MoviePass. We've been talking about it for the last couple of weeks now. We just got it at the end of last year, and we've been exploring it a little bit.
All right, so MoviePass is either a monthly service or an annual service,
mm-hmm.
and it allows you to go to one movie a day.
Every day of the year.
All right, and not only can you go to one movie, there are some little, the asterisks there.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't go to an IMAX, you can't go to a 3D movie.
Right.
And once you've seen a movie, you can't see it again.
Hmm.
So if you saw Star Wars today, tomorrow you couldn't go back and see Star Wars.
With the same MoviePass. You would have to pay for it separate from MoviePass.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. So this is a wonderful service. It's $10 a month. And we wanted a person who, one, has used MoviePass for a while, and two, loves movies. So, you know, obviously we got Kyle on. So let's basically ask them some questions and see if we can get some good information.
So Kyle, you've been using MoviePass for a while now. When did you start with it?
I think I started about 5 months ago, somewhere in that ballpark. So it's been a great experience so far. So loving it.
So your movies in 2016, your 150 movies that you watched in 2016, you did that on your own without MoviePass.
Yes. Hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I wish I had MoviePass at that time. That would have made things a lot easier and much less expensive. But that was a combination of Netflix, Redbox, going to the movies, and then just finding it and as many ways as I could to watch those films.
So let's step back and let's just start at the beginning. So tell us about your love for movies.
So it's interesting. I would say growing up, I was a pretty just casual moviegoer. Like any kid, I watch a lot of kids movies, a lot of Disney. I remember cult classics like Blank Check or really silly, not good movies like Warriors of Virtue that I had on VHS that was in the cabinet, right? And so I had the normal childhood. And I lived with a guy right after college named Mark who had the exact opposite childhood. He didn't watch cartoons. He didn't watch Nickelodeon. Didn't do all those things. He just watched movies. And so he had this weird trivia piece where he could name off the best picture winner at the Oscars from like 1966 all the way to the year we were in. And we would test him in public, be like, Mark, go do it. And he would just run it off one after the other. Right. And so being around him and another one of the other guys, Warren, they were big movie guys. And so I started to kind of think a little bit more about films and become less of a casual moviegoer. So it's only until probably about 2013 that I started to spend more and more time in that area. But for the longest time, I was, you know, just the average person that would watch movies every once in a while, go to the theaters, you know, once or twice every couple months, but nothing crazy.
So did you study film in college, or was it just these guys that influenced you?
So weird enough, when I was in college, I was actually an anthropology and sociology major. So we studied films in our classes, but never a film course. Being that I went to a liberal arts school, I had to fulfill some general distribution requirements. And one of those was a film course. And so I joined in with a bunch of communications majors in this multiculturalism in film class. It was with this professor, Dr. Wild, who was notoriously the hardest professor. He was the harshest grader. If you got an A in anything in his class, you busted your butt. And so I took this course, and I never really looked at film with a critical lens before. And what that course allowed me to do by watching movies like Thunderheart and The Chosen and things I normally would have never watched is to start to pick out the symbolism in films and pick out the little threads that connect all the films. And so, for example, if you watch a ton of films, you'll recognize in the last scene, there's this open road and metaphor that always happens, right? Where the characters are either in a car or they're walking, they're going towards something and you don't know where they're going, right? That, and the purpose behind that from a filmmaking standpoint is to kind of tell the story that there's this open road, this journey available to them, and there's numerous possibilities, right? And I didn't recognize that until I took that course and started to see the connections of how filmmakers are subtly driving narratives throughout the film. And so being in that course, I got an A in a paper about The Chosen, and that was like a unicorn in Dr. Wild's class. And so from there, I was kind of hooked in terms of just analyzing film in ways I had never done it before. So I didn't necessarily study film in college, but that's when the spark lit for me to get interested in film.
Well, how has your love of movies changed over the years?
I think I've definitely gone from the casual to probably a little bit more hardcore. I make time in my schedule to see films, right? Like I will probably go at some point today because I have a lot of free time. I will probably go use my movie pass and go see Hostels or something else later today. Mm-hmm. And so I've gone from, if I see something great, to this point of I schedule my life around being able to see at least a couple films per week. Considering the clip at where I watch movies, it's about two per week that I have to hit to kind of get to the goal by the end of the year to say, I got a really good snapshot of the films that were produced in 2017.
And you're writing a blog and doing these Snapchat reviews so that you're sharing your experiences with others. What kind of advice do you give to people to enhance their experience watching a movie?
I think a few things. I think pre-work before you go in, ratings on IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes aren't everything, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, you could do your research about a film, watch the trailer, look at the coming soon category under IMDb to just kind of see what's coming around the bend. Because I think half the challenge for folks is they don't know some of the really good films out there. I write about it in my blog that there were films like The Florida Project and Killing of a Sacred Deer and Mother from this past year that I think the mainstream don't really know about. They know about some of the other ones like Daddy's Home 2 and Jumanji, you know, films that
I like Jumanji.
Have wider appeal. I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying they have wider appeal
right.
To larger audiences, right? Where some of these other films are a little bit more niche content. My recommendation is on the front end, do your research about the films. And then on the back end, one of the things I love to do is to go through the IMDb trivia about a film, because then it gives me a little extra perspective on what was going on in the film. It tells a story on the back end and helps me, if I'm struggling to understand why, what happened during this, I can get some of those clues and start to piece things together, especially if I don't have somebody to talk to about it. So those are some of my recommendations to really get the most out of your experience in the theater.
Or you could just listen to our show, and we give you all the opening movies, and we tell you about all the bad movies that are coming out so that you can go see all the bad movies like I do.
I take back everything I just said and plug that.
Yeah, that's, you should.
You're right. 100%.
You should be our film expert. You should come in and give us the film expert perspective on things. That's for sure.
Well, you did a review just a moment ago about a current movie. Tell me about another movie that you've seen and why a person should see it and what they should look for.
I slightly referenced it earlier, but I am a huge fanboy of The Disaster Artist. And it's not because of the film. The film alone, the way it stands with the Francos and Seth Rogen, is really, really good. You could not know any of the context behind the film and why it exists and still enjoy it.
Right.
But once you take a step back and you learn about the cultural phenomenon that is The Room, released in 2003, widely considered the worst best movie of all time, or the best worst movie of all time, mm-hmm. depending on your perspective.
Yeah, we reviewed The Room, yes. and then we reviewed The Disaster Artist when it came out. I went actually to one of our arts theaters here in Chicago to watch The Disaster Artist with a full room of people who knew the backstory of The Room, and we enjoyed it very much. The Disaster Artist is a really good movie, and it's got all of the cult classic of The Room behind it.
So I first saw The Room when I was in graduate school, so 2013. That's really when I started to get into movies, into the place where I'm at now. And one of my buddies, he was the volleyball coach, he called me and said, "Hey, I got this movie. I'm told it's truly awful, but we have to see it." And I was super like, "Nah, I'm good. There are probably better ways to spend my time." Luckily, he convinced me, came over, watched it. And from there, I was hooked, line and sinker. And I've been spreading the gospel of The Room since then. And so we had heard years ago, he and I keep in touch mostly based on this film. I get an "Oh, hi, Kyle" by a text every once in a while. And
it's a great story.
It is. And so, I try to tell the gospel as much as I can about it. I actually dressed up as Tommy Wiseau for Halloween this past year.
Nice.
And so I was rolling around with my football in hand and my wig.
Tuxedo, I hope.
No, I had I had a blazer with the V-neck underneath.
And so cargo shorts?
I know there are a couple Tommy Wiseau looks. I went with yes. the khakis. The ultimate gist is, it's so bad, it's great. The live movie experience is even better. And when we heard that the Francos and Rogan were potentially going to pick up Greg Sestero's book, The Disaster Artist, and turn it into a film, we've been waiting 2+ years for this thing. And if you looked at the IMDb profile, it kept pushing off the start date, pushing mm-hmm. it off, pushing it off. So we kept wondering, is this thing ever going to happen? And then it hit. Then it came out. James Franco won a Golden Globe for Best Actor.
Mm-hmm. Rightly so.
He's had some controversy recently, which is probably why he wasn't nominated for an Oscar in that area. But as a fan of just The Room itself, it's really interesting to see Tommy Wiseau kind of get the acclaim he was thinking he deserved back in the early 2000s.
Yeah, when he was doing this movie, he thought he was going to be a superstar. And he was on stage at the Golden Globes. He wasn't accepting an award, but he was on stage at the Golden Globes. That was Tommy Wiseau.
The best moment is when he goes to talk and James pushes him out and says,
just shakes his head. No, Tommy, this is not a good idea.
This is your moment, but it's not that kind of moment.
Yeah, we reported on what he was reportedly going to say something about we should all love each other and it's a great time to be alive. And it seemed like a simple enough idea, but he probably would have said it in a different way.
There's no telling what would have happened.
Right.
So my review is of The Disaster Artist. It's a fantastic film. Go out and see it.
I agree.
You recently had a blog post called The 7 Primary Reasons People Aren't Going to the Movie Theaters Anymore. And that's one of the reasons we sought you out to introduce us to MoviePass and to your movie experience. Tell us a little bit about that article. Why aren't people going to the movie theater anymore?
That's a very good question, Chip. I think a lot of people have been asking that question. A lot of media outlets, a lot of experts in the film industry in general has been asking that question, right? So on my end, I'll blog when I feel passionate about something. And it got to the point where let me just ask my network. And I've got people from all corners of the country and all across the globe. And I just asked them, why don't you go to the movies anymore? They're just doing a little crowdsourcing. And I had upwards of 40 people share their feedback. And from there, I went back into my qualitative coding days and put together some themes based on that. And so for me, there are 7 reasons I put in there. There's an 8th that I would love to add, and that's, I think, some individuals don't see themselves in the films, right? That there's a lack of representation in films, mm-hmm. Versus I think some TV shows do a better job of that, and that's why people are spending more of their time there. But the main 4 reasons in my mind that people aren't going to the theaters anymore, I think number 1, this blockbuster bubble where Hollywood gets stuck into these big budget films, explosions, technology, all these things, the really good films, the art, I think a lot of that gets lost. And it's really hard to market those films in the market of the big blockbuster movies. And so people aren't seeing the original content that they want to see. And so they're going other places for it because less and less people are on cable, less and less people are watching trailers on TV. And so you've got to go out of your way to find that stuff anymore. I think people are just smarter with their money. At the end of the day, the experience of going to a movie, especially if you don't have the movie pass, gets really expensive. Mm-hmm. And so people are just less likely to spend their money out at the theater. And I can't blame them in a lot of ways. And then finally, I think there's just a big oversaturation of content. The Netflix, Hulu world, and Amazon Prime, all these places with original TV shows and content. I mean, you guys know. You'll probably hear from 5 people this week that tell you about a new TV show that you have to watch, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, I'm watching movies. I don't have time for that. Or you're stuck on one TV show. There's always a queue of new TV shows everyone needs to watch. And so with so much in that area, films, although it's a 1.5 to 2.5 hour commitment, people really enjoy the storylines over 8 to 12 episodes and over season after season. And so I think when you're competing against taking someone's time away, people enjoy that they can look at more character development over a longer period of time. I'm sure there are other reasons, but to me, based on my experiences working with people and anecdotally, those seem to be the biggest reasons why.
So you're using MoviePass. We've got our MoviePasses ready to go for our movie-going experiences. Do you suggest that other people should be getting into that? What are some of your suggestions to get the most out of this concept of MoviePass?
You know, it's interesting. Last night, before Phantom Thread, I was sitting out in the lobby talking to a woman about, the movie experience, what she was going to see. They were going to see 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Also a very good film, highly recommended. Mm-hmm. And I had mentioned, hey, I'm using my movie pass. And she was there with 3 other people. And she's like, oh, my goodness, we've been considering it. I'm not sure if we should get it. And so I kind of gave her the spiel of what's going on. And I just basically always start with the question of, how often do you go to the movies, right? And they might say once a month, once every couple months. And then I follow up with, how often would you like to go to the movies? Because that's a very different question.
Sure. Right?
Especially with how expensive things are. And usually when I ask that question, as last night, she was like, I would love to be going more than I do now. And so there was a guy that was with her. It was like, I go once or twice a year. And at that point, I was like, yeah, it's probably not the best investment for you. But if you're the kind of person that goes, you know, semi-frequently but would like to go more, invest in it. There's an option. If you pay the full year up front, you get it for $7.49 a month. I did that to save myself $2.50 a month. Mm-hmm. But even if you go to one movie a month and you go in the evening to where it's not $5 matinee prices, you get your money back, right? And you go to two, you've doubled your value.
Sure.
So at the end of the day, like anything else, it's an investment. And if you're willing to make the time to go to the movies, I think you're going to be in a good place. Because movie theaters, no, they don't make their money on tickets. They make their money at concessions. And the theaters that have embraced the movie pass recognize when you walk in from a psychological standpoint, you will say to yourself, well, I didn't pay to get in, so I'll spend money on food. And then they're like, gotcha, sucker.
There you go, $20 for popcorn and water.
Yeah. Which brings us to some of the theaters that are kind of not working very well with MoviePass. AMC this week had some issues. MoviePass stopped using a couple of prime AMC theaters as a part of this. Do you see that as a trend that's going to continue?
You know, I don't really know. Landmark in my area doesn't take it, and they own the Arts Theater here in the area, which plays a lot of the Oscar-type films, and so that becomes a challenge. There's also a Landmark theater two minutes from my house that doesn't take the MoviePass either. I will say last night was the first time I've ever experienced issues with the MoviePass. It wasn't really letting me check in. I was at a Regal theater. I think that's a really good question, Steve. I don't know what the industry is going to do. I haven't seen the books and the accounting on the back end to compare between theaters that are using the MoviePass and theaters that aren't to see, is it working? Is it not, right? Because everybody has been saying since MoviePass, because MoviePass has been around a while, but it was a lot more expensive. I believe it was $20, $30 a month before that.
Up to
and when
50.
They reduced it to, yeah, and I mean, when they reduced it to 10, that's when everybody said, is this a sustainable model? And I would just be purely speculating because I don't have the numbers in terms of where it's at, but I will be paying attention.
But as an outsider, it seems like the theaters would be benefiting from having people in the seats.
And they are paying full price for the ticket. So it's not like if the ticket is $13 at the theater, MoviePass is paying that $13.
So they're losing money on every person that goes into that theater, but the theater theoretically is making that $20 on popcorn, and that movie's going to play whether there's nobody in the room or if there's a whole bunch of people.
Yep. Like any other business, they're hoping, I assume, that people are going to purchase it because it's convenient and it's cheap and then not going to use it certain months. So that way they can bank those dollars to offset what they have to pay to people like us who go, feel like Chip, to go three times in a week, right?
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. And it also kind of works. I use the MoviePass this week at AMC. Mm-hmm. So what I did notice was last night there were some gray areas. Where when you log into the app, there's a red area means that you can press it. So if you want to go to the 10 o'clock show or the 7 o'clock show or whatever, you press it to secure MoviePass loading your debit card that they give you. So you can purchase your ticket. AMC has been graying out some of those show times. So I don't know if that means it's sold out or if AMC is basically playing with this, saying, hey, for this showing, we're not going to allow the MoviePass. From what I've read, AMC has stated they're concerned about the movie experience, and if something ever happens to MoviePass, it'll reflect on them. I don't connect MoviePass with the theater I'm going to.
I think there's more risk inherently for the MoviePass than the theaters themselves.
Yes, I agree.
Based on my experience. Mm-hmm. The MoviePass itself, I mean, for most theaters, you have to be within, 100 yards to be able to book your ticket, right? So it's tough if it's opening night of a big blockbuster movie. So when Infinity War comes out in May, it's going to be tough to use your MoviePass the day of unless you can drive up earlier, get to the theater, pick your time, book your ticket, and then be able to come back later, right?
And you'll sit right next to the theater. You'll be right next to that screen,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Whereas Studio Movie Grill here in the area, they are one of the few theaters where I can legitimately sit on my bed and book a seat in a theater from here, I can pick my spot, and I'm good to go.
So how can our listeners find out more information about your writings?
My blog, as you guys mentioned earlier, kyleahickman.blogspot.com. There's no regular schedule there. It's more so when I feel good about a topic and I want to share something that I think is unique that isn't out in the sphere. But otherwise, the easiest way to just follow me on Snapchat, kylehickman24. And that's where I pop daily, weekly reviews of movies and try to be helpful for folks. I get good feedback. I think some of my friends probably think, do you post anything else? But for the folks who are interested in films and only have so much time, right? And there's a lot of options out there.
Sure.
I try to be a little bit of a guiding light to say, hey, if you had to pick between these three or four, based on your personality, this might be the best option.
And we'll also have that in our show notes. So if you go to our show notes, you can just click through too.
Yep. Very good. Beautiful. Thank you so much for coming in and explaining all about MoviePass and about all these Oscar-nominated films. And we will definitely be following you on Snapchat, and we'll figure out what the heck that is because we're old people.
Yeah, it's a limited access for some of the older folks, but that's okay. I appreciate it. It's been fantastic. I appreciate the invite.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Kyle. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. We're going to be ready Tuesday morning after all of the fun of the weekend and Groundhog Day, and we'll find out whether or not the weather's going to change.
I hope it has. It's actually been wonderfully mild recently.
It's cold outside.
Get your booties.
That's right. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our new site, news.toomuchscrolling.com. Find all the information that you need. I want to thank our guest, Kyle Hickman, for coming in and talking all about all the wonderful things that he knows about movies, way more than I know. That's great. It's great to find those sorts of people. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I am the Groundhog.
We'll see you in the future. What I want to talk about, what I want to thank you for, what I want to